Good, thank you very much. Thanks for listening in. Good questions over coffee, so I appreciate that. Any, do keep asking questions. If you want to ask in this second part, just stick your hand up or whatever, I'm happy to stop for a moment and back up or you know, whatever it might be. I just want to talk about some of the challenges and failures that we faced in Northwest Youth Works as part of the Northwest Partnership. And some of these I hope will resonate with some of you. Maybe you're facing the same things, and I might talk a little bit about what we've done about that. And the first challenge we faced was the challenge of geography. That actually, when you talk about a gospel partnership, just geographically, you're talking about a big area, and I think the Southwest is quite a big area. Is that right? Yeah, in terms of how it's divvied up. I mean, put it this way, the Northwest Partnership stretches from Stoke to the Scottish border. Okay? It's a big area. And Carlisle is closer to Glasgow than it is to Manchester. So, how do we... And add on top of this, this is being recorded, isn't it? Never mind. People in Liverpool are a pain in the neck. They're very much kind of on the side. So you've got, in the north... You've got this, in the northwest, you've got this artery of the M6 that runs down, which makes it really handy. You can kind of just jump on a motorway in most places and zoom up to Leyland or wherever it is that you're having it. And then you've got Liverpool on the kind of west coast who are quite kind of insular. And it's like, why would we want to leave Liverpool? That was not a bad accent, actually. It's better than some of them. They normally end up Irish or something like that. And so that makes the whole dynamic quite hard of kind of, actually, how do you foster partnership with people who are quite far away from each other and feel that? So we have struggled with that over the years, and we just tried to carry on doing what we're doing and encourage people personally to jump on ship. One of the things we've done in terms of our youth worker lunches is we've just varied it around the country and letting individual churches take ownership of providing the lunch and hosting and all that kind of stuff, which I think has just worked quite well. It worked quite well in terms of just getting other people on board a little bit. So sometimes we'll go a bit further north, sometimes we'll go a bit further south. We try and go west and Liverpool don't come. There is a peculiar challenge of partnership in youth ministry just simply because of the geography of the place and what we're trying to do. And it's kind of meant that our Saturday training day for volunteers, we've ended up doing a big one in the south and kind of everybody trekking up to Carlisle to do a smaller one in the north. But we felt that was necessary because they feel so isolated, because really then... They're near nothing. Have you looked where Carlisle is on the map? I mean, it really is. I mean, I'm from Scotland, but Carlisle is in the middle of nowhere. And so actually kind of making that effort to say, do you know what, we're partnering with you. We'll make the effort to come up to you. Because we can. And doing all kinds of things like that, where we can. Secondly, low numbers. And so if you imagine, I mean, you've got quite a good group of ministers here. Particularly kind of church in terms of pastorates, vicars, what have you. But obviously, you know, not every church has a youth or children's worker. And therefore, that kind of reduces the number in the partnership when it comes to youth and children's ministry. And so that is a particular challenge when it comes to partnering among youth and children. Which actually kind of means that those churches that do have youth and children's ministers need to be as generous as they can be to enable partnership to blossom and flourish. And those low numbers can actually, in some ways, can be a benefit. I think, so what happened with us, we started with a kind of small group of, I think about eight of us, sitting in a room and planning things. And before we knew it, well, not before we knew it, it took a number of years, but you know, some of our lunches, we get 30 youth and children's ministers. Now that kind of then, in terms of planning in a partnership, that becomes quite unwieldy, and so we had a little committee group to kind of plan and sort things. But then of course then you've kind of got a partnership within a partnership, and there's a problem there. So how do you How do the people in the partnership take ownership, perhaps, if decisions are being made elsewhere? And I think that's still a question that I'm working through in terms of how do we enable the whole group who have bought into this to really come on board, particularly if it feels like there are decisions from on high that are being, you know, just told to people. But on the same hand, you want to protect what you're doing because we're, you know, relatively doctrinally kind of circled in that sense. The third challenge in youth and children's partnership is the lack of autonomy and freedom that a youth and children's minister has. So by the, you know, by the nature of a pastor or a vicar, he's in charge, right? Whereas a youth worker is, a youth minister is answerable to their boss. So their boss says, no, you're not doing that. They don't do it. And so there have been a number of times where I said, look, it would be really helpful if your youth minister took on running this. And the vicar's gone, no, we've got far too much to do here. Actually, that's really hard because rightly they've gone, well, you know, I'm under authority, I can't do that. So it changes the dynamic a little bit in terms of allowing that to flourish and blossom and grow. The fourth area of challenge is the lack of natural partnership that occurs between youth and children's ministers. What I mean by that is that most of your vicars and pastors, most of you who are vicars and pastors, will have been to theological college. Okay, and theological college is 3 years normally spent cheek by jowl with other people who are like-minded, who you then end up serving in a church maybe 20 miles away from or something like that. In other words, there's already existing friendships going on between vicars and pastors. I know it's my bugbear, but youth workers and youth ministers and children's ministers tend not to get theological educations. I wish we can. Okay, I'd like to encourage that. But what that means is, and often they get it in different ways. So for me, it was distance learning via union. But that doesn't enable the collegiate spirit of friendship. That simply means when you turn up at someone like this, it's like, yeah, we've spent 3 years at theological college together, and we can hit the ground running in terms of partnership. And so that makes things slower. So this is not my own work. I said at the beginning, this is, you know, I feel like this has been going on around me. And so I asked the other people involved in Northwest Youth Works, what would you say to this gathering? And one of the most helpful comments was patience. That actually, partnership is built on friendship. And friendship just takes time. It takes time to build trust, to go, do you fancy doing a little event together? Or do you fancy coming and doing some training at our church? Or why don't we do this together? That just takes time. And it's taken us 14 years to feel like we're beginning to get anywhere. So it's patience, and it's enabling those friends, finding ways to enable those friendships to grow and blossom, to enable encouragement and partnership to occur. So be patient in what you're trying to do. If it starts small, great. And the fifth thing, which is another little bit of a bugbear of mine, is the brevity of posts for youth and children's ministers. How on earth are you going to do partnership based on trust and friendship between youth and children's ministers if they're in post for 3 years? That just cannot work. You're not going to get anywhere. We need to have a longer vision and a bigger vision. And other bugbear, that involves theological training and you know, encouraging people to stay in the post and all that kind of stuff. If we're going to get youth and children's ministry partnership off the ground, it takes years. Now, you can't always engineer these things, can you? You know, you get a youth minister or children's minister in post, and, you know, they, after 3 years or whatever, they decide to go and be ordained, or they decide to move on to another position. But that's never going to happen if we advertise for three-year posts. We've got the money for 3 years. Great. And that, hopefully that's just a start. But we want to be moving beyond that to say, actually, we want somebody who will commit to the lives of our children and young people to see them through to adulthood. I had the joy of baptizing a young man in our congregation who was a baby in his mother's arms when I arrived. That's the kind of youth ministry that I esteem and that I want to see happening. And most of the people who I work alongside in Northwest Youth Works have been in post 10 years plus. And it's taken a long time to get to that stage. So, five things that have been a challenge to us. The distance and the size, the geography, the low numbers, which come with being a youth and children's minister, the lack of autonomy and freedom, the lack of natural partnership, and the brevity of the posts. Some of those things can be overcome. Some of them will be harder too. But if you want to see youth and children's partnership, ministry, encouragement flourishing in the Southwest, I think you need to take those things seriously. Certainly, I felt we had to. Failures. What have we got wrong? What things haven't worked? So, every 3 years, we discussed as a youth and children's kind of Northwest Youth Works, in our lunches, we discussed, right, let's get some aims for the next 3 years. Let's get some things that we want to do. And so we'd talk about it with them, and then we'd go away as a committee and kind of work it through and present these goals. So we've had things like the Sunday DIY, the training course was a goal, the union module was a goal, but so were starting up an 11 to 14's sound teaching day. It's never happened. It's been on our kind of 3-year goals list twice. Improving training for preschool leaders. It's been on our goals for twice now over 3 years. Okay, we're limited. Our hands are bound by who we have and who is there and what we'll aim for things. We'll try and do things, because if we try and do things, they'll happen. But actually, if they don't happen, that's okay. We might just roll it over to another set of 3-year goals. Or we might drop it because it's not achievable. So failures, we kind of thought, well, that's okay. I'd rather fail than not try. That sounds terribly like that Dolly Parton song, doesn't it? You know, the Dolly Parton, that's the worst bit of an expressive individualism I've ever heard. And Dolly Parton, you don't know. Do you know this? No? No Dolly Parton fans.
We were more than 9 to 5.
Gotcha. What have I started? So failed goals. The second failure, I think, has been, I kind of hinted at it before, but this sense of ownership. And the insipid consumerism that is within us. So if we put on a lunch with a well-known speaker, we'll get twice the numbers coming. That's not partnership, is it? I'm glad to see so few people here today. Partnership is the opposite of consumerism. That's why we were so keen to say encouraging one another. And the danger of our own success is that the Northwest Partnership gets a name and it becomes a thing. And we get people coming to us saying, the Northwest Partnership need to be doing this and helping us with this. And we have to say, who is the Northwest Partnership? It's you. So when you say, you need to be doing this, what you're actually saying is, we need to be doing this. And so we encourage people to turn up, even when the speaker, like today, is rubbish. So well done. That sense of consumerism, which is so insipid, is the one thing that is going to kill partnership, particularly amongst youth and children's ministers. I know, we're all busy. We have 101 other things to do. We've got a funeral to run tomorrow that we need to think about. We've got this, that, and the other. But it often... We often don't use those excuses if a big-name speaker is coming to speak to us. And so we've had to work pretty hard against that. And I don't think we've succeeded. I think that's been one of the big failures. The numbers, just watching numbers go up and down. Now, sometimes you could argue, well, this is more useful to some than others. You know, this topic is more useful this time, therefore we get more people. But that's still a sense of consumerism, isn't it? Which is, and this is the big struggle that I've been trying to work through between protecting kind of the aims and objectives of Northwest Partnership, but also allowing the organic nature of partnership to occur as and when. Because the danger of people in smoke-filled rooms making decisions is that that's not partnership either. That's a kind of top-down, becomes a top-down parachurch organisation. And so my question is, well, how much do you give the partners within the partnership ownership of the decision-making? Even if you think, maybe I wouldn't do it that way. And how much do you say, no, this is what we're going to do, and you're going to jump on board? Because that never works. If you have a solution to that, that would be brilliant. Do talk to me afterwards. But I think that's what we have failed at. And that is being a victim of our own success. And there's a danger of names and branding that brings an identity to things which undermines partnership. Does that make sense? Yeah. So enabling ownership and undermining consumerism is something I would encourage you to work towards if you want to see youth and children's ministry flourishing. And then just finally, so three things, you know, failed goals, but that's okay. Consumerism and working and ownership and working against that. And then just finally, relationships. And I kind of hinted at it before, relationships take time. And I think we've often got to the stage where we've wanted to pass on the things we're doing, but we've not enabled the relationships to flourish to allow that passing on. Does that make sense? So if we're running an event, we hold the strings tightly such that it becomes an event we're running rather than an expression of partnership. And actually, an expression of partnership is those relationships and trust to say, actually, yeah, come on board and help me run this, and we'll run it together. And then being able to pass it on, and so on. Okay, so being able to, So I've just passed on the H11s venture that I've been running for 15 years, which has been, that's my baby, that's been really hard to do. But it's been good to do. Why has it taken me 15 years? Because I'm as guilty as anyone. And those relationships do take time. There's no quick fix solution. And as soon as we think we're in a place of passing something on to somebody, they often leave and move to another post or whatever it might be. So there's that constant flux and that constant sense of, you know, frustration, and we could be doing more and failure. But that's where we've got to. That's what we do. We're continuing to work against it, continuing to work for the flourishing of youth and children's ministry in partnership. And that's me. Any questions off the back of that? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about kind of the partnership side of it.
Yeah.
I'm just really interested to talk about Bible-centered families, youth and children's ministry.
Yeah.
What does that look like in your church? Just for an example.
Yeah.
That can be done just on a smaller scale rather than the partnership.
Yeah, within the church. What do we do? I guess its basic ethos is it means that the obvious thing, the Bible is at the heart of all we do. Okay, so whenever we do something, everything we do is centered on the Bible. So we're not just playing random games. We're playing games that help us to work through some of the big Bible truths, or you know, activities or whatever you might call them. So it's thoroughly shaped around a passage we may be teaching, for example, but also the whole ethos of what we're trying to do is shaped by Scripture. So we wouldn't run a sorry if this is stepping on toes, but we wouldn't run a a Friday night club, which is kind of a bit of a rave, and then a kind of 5-minute God slot at the end, in the hope that that might do some gospel ministry. That I wouldn't see that as Bible-centered youth ministry. Does that make sense? Happy to talk more about that if you want. Okay. Yeah.
Last partnership meeting, you were talking about the value of partnering for the church planting.
Yeah.
And I guess when you're thinking about a limited amount of money to employ people, you might be thinking, this chunk of money could get us someone who would go off and plant a church, where there is one. Or it could get us a youth worker.
Yeah. What would I say?
Put you in a difficult position there. Look, let's speak into that.
So when I started youth ministry nearly 20 years ago, oh, scary. And I wouldn't include myself in this category, anybody who was hip and trendy went to be a youth worker, right? If you were a hip young man, you want to be a youth worker. That's what you were pushed to do. I wasn't a hip young man, was I, Spencer? You remember it well. I was more hip than you, but... now if you're a hip young man, with a check shirt and a, you know, so on, you get sent to be a church planter. So numbers in youth and children's ministry plummeted. Now I understand that. I understand that, but in a sense that is a fad. It might be a right fad, but it is a fad. Just as youth ministry, you know, was a fad in the 90s, and you know, we're reaping the terrible destruction that some of bad youth ministry has caused. You know, it's context, isn't it? You need to make the decision on context. But what I would say, and I'm getting in my car and going up the M6 in a few hours, so I feel I can say this, is ministry trainees are not a cheap way of getting youth ministry. Please, they are not. If you want to take youth ministry and children's ministry seriously, having a ministry trainee to do it for you is, I hope I've convinced you that could be destructive and unhelpful. At which point you say, but that's all the money I've got. It's like, yes, I understand that. In which case, take your youth ministry trainee and if they're keen to do this long term, train them properly to do it well for you. So... I may have to leave at this point. I don't know.
Robin, can I?
Yeah, Spencer.
Come back on that for a second.
No, yeah.
Not to disagree with you, I've certainly never dared do that, but I hear your point, and I totally agree with your point. Yet, having a ministry trainee who is not a million miles in age from some of the people in the youth group actually may relate to them better and start talking to them.
So,
I'm not saying they take the whole responsibility, I'm just asking, there's a problem with getting these trainings to work with young people, perhaps not to run the youth, that's what I'm asking.
So, run the last bit by me again.
Well, I think what I've heard you say is don't get ministry trainees to run the youth away. I can't imagine most of us would disagree with that, but getting ministry trainees involved with youth
is good, yes. Right. It is good. But don't be mistaken in thinking that young people want a mate. They don't want a mate. They want a spiritual uncle or a spiritual granddad. My 14-year-old daughter is a delight, but you never quite know which 14-year-old daughter is going to wake up in the morning. And she's... I'm very, very grateful for a grandma and a lady who's older than me in the congregation who run a little girls' Bible study for her, who have the wealth of experience to go, I don't know your teenage life, but I'm willing to listen, and I'll tell you what I've learned over the years. So we can buy into the, you know, our culture sells us the idolatry of youth. And in a youth-obsessed age, and actually, I'm not sure that's always the best, the right kind of way to go. So, James, you had a question.
Yeah, going back to Northwest Gospel Partnership.
Yeah.
Rick sounds really exciting, lots of stuff for children and youth. I'd love to hear a bit more about how you partner together, working with families.
Yeah. So there are a number of things that we've done. Thank you. It's a really good question. Part of it is just putting it on the agenda. That if we put it in the title, and actually this is one of my other failures, was calling it was allowing it to be called North West Youth Works, because there are a number of people who go, well, it doesn't really do kids' work, does it? It's like, well, yeah, but we have to call it something. I changed that now, but you know, it is what it is. It's, you know, people know it. But putting families in the title simply makes people go, oh yeah, we have to think of families too, don't we? Because children and young people come in families. Some of the things we've done, it's partly just adjusting what we're doing to involving and engage with families. So maybe our Saturday training day might involve, you know, some seminars and partnering with parents and just bringing that aspect into play. We have done some of those volunteer training days, which we've opened up to parents because they've been particularly acute subjects, you know, whether it's engaging with the world of the young person. And we've said, look, parents, you can come along too, and try to engage that side of things. In terms of family, yeah, I did wonder a while about doing kind of family evangelistic events in partnership, but I think when we went down that road, it just didn't come to anything that was going to be fruitful. So in the way that we're doing like an Exeter Lens venture, it just wasn't going to work. But we tried to kind of bring it in other places. So when we do the Exeter Lens ventures, trying to communicate and engage with parents when we can, and that kind of thing, just to put it a bit more on the agenda. And in terms of training for youth workers, kind of, okay, what is family ministry? What are we trying to do? That kind of thing. Is that helpful?
Okay. Yeah. Take it back to an issue. But how, given there is we need to get people into children's work for the long term.
Mm. Yeah, well, so, I mean, so it was a deliberately blunt comment.
I think you're absolutely right. You think we do
it? It can be, people need to get into youth and children ministry, don't they? And therefore, it's a good place for ministry trainees to try their hands. I think when it comes to kind of putting them in charge and kind of saying, look, you know, you're in charge of the youth group for the year that you're here, or 2 years that you're here. I think it's a little bit like saying, why don't you go off and do a church plant? Which I hope we'd never do, and yet we do with our young people, who are actually more theologically vulnerable.
Yeah,
I
agree 100% yeah. with you there. There's a question there, well, you would be tempted to do that, but how do we do it?
For the long haul, that's a good question. I'm not sure I have the answer. I think part of it is yes, you try it. Do you love it? Part of it is you sell the vision to the church family and to them. Actually, can you see the magic that it is to be involved in the lives of these children and young people? And kind of saying like that. Partly it's having experienced youth and children's workers who have been in the job in the one place a while as an example, and valuing them and encouraging them to stay and enabling them to stay where we can, because the 5 years that you put on the 5 years already done is five better years than you could possibly get from a new worker. And I think for me, it has been seeing people in youth ministry for the long term that has helped me to go, yeah, I can. And actually having that sense of partnership within the lunches, that there are other people who are, you know, finding it hard going, but sticking it, and we can chat about our failures and our frustrations there, and say to each other, let's keep going. I think, is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything else? I have a question.
Yeah.
You talk a lot about the sort of partnership level stuff.
Yes.
And how this plays out in what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So I don't want to pretend that what we do in the local church is anywhere near perfect. There are always things I want to change. It's, you know, it's always kind of a work in progress, as Ruth will tell you. The Excellence Venture, we're constantly pushing that and getting kids and leaders from the church along to that, because that's, you know, we want churches to partner not just in sending children but also in sending leaders. And then through the kind of camp system that's set up to serve that. So that's been kind of a backbone of our summers, I guess. That's how we've chosen to do it. And then feeding the 14-18s from our summer camp, from the Vive, into our sound events, and enabling that and talking about what they've been doing and that kind of thing. Trying to get my leaders along to the Saturday training day, which has been hugely hard. So I get my leader. This is being recorded. Is this going online? I love my leaders dearly, and they're so valuable. I get them to sign a covenant every year as to their responsibilities, and on that covenant it says, I will go to a day's training event once a year. I get about five of them along. but it's trying to kind of encourage that sense of training. Come on, let's go, and we need this. This is helpful to us. This will encourage us. This will help us do the job better, and all that. So feeding into that. They were guinea pigs for Sunday DIY, and we continue to kind of work through that. What else? That's probably.
What's the weekly pattern?
What's the weekly pattern for us?
Just drill down, show us that.
Okay, in terms of youth or children's?
Either,
Nathan,
whether you're youth,
both.
Just give us a
flavour. Okay, so I need to kind of back up and explain a little bit about our context. So we are quite a set parish, if that makes sense. You know, there's not much kind of overlap into the next parish, and we're not really a gathered church. We're pretty much from, you know, 70% from the parish, which is an urban priority area, kind of deprivation levels in places of Tower Hamlets, so, you know, large kind of drug issues and you know, family chaos going on, all that kind of stuff. So I go into a couple of the schools, primary schools, and we do assemblies and run jump clubs and various other bits and pieces there. And then from there, I do a little Tuesday outreach club for the children, which is from beginning to end focused on what we're teaching, and has a solid, you know, has a kind of 15 minute talk with a little kind of 10 minute chat about it afterwards, and we could probably get about 30 kids along to that. Junior age, so year 3 to 6. We're just starting up a Thursday afternoon drop in for parents who are passing with their kids to come and have tea and toast and look at a Bible story and chat and get to know us and do a bit of craft together on a Thursday. Then that feeds into our youth group, which happens after the service on a Sunday evening, where we often follow up or do some kind of issue that's come out, the passage or the sermon with them. Again, it's focused on what we're doing, focused on what we're teaching. So we try and make all the kind of activities focus in on the, you know, maybe 20-minute talk and 10-minute engagement from that. Plus, we also try and do small group Bible studies, but that's quite resource-heavy, so it doesn't always work. So that's kind of what we're doing. Does that help?
Yep, true.
Our theory is, so I was chatting over coffee. There are two kind of ways of doing youth work. One is outside in, and the other is inside out. So outside in is when you send your youth worker out to do detached youth work and build relationships in the hope that they might entice people in. Inside out is when you disciple your young people to then go out and be the evangelists. Now, each have problems and issues, and it's, you know, the inside out, that's quite hard to do. In terms of, but I think it's a better strategy. So that's what we're trying to do. Really, kind of, actually, you don't want to come to our youth group if you're not interested in Christian things. So I think when I get churches phoning up and saying we're having real problems with behaviour at our youth group, and like, what do you do? Well, we kind of kick the ball around for an hour and, you know, do crazy stuff, and then we do a 5-minute kind of God slot talk. I'm like, well, they don't want to be there. Why have they come? They've come to play games and because it's fun. They've not come because it's the gospel. because we've lost confidence that actually young people can be interested in the gospel and interested in the big ideas of life. Therefore, let's not make it dull, but actually let's make it about Jesus from beginning to end, such that if you have no interest in it at all, you wouldn't want to be there. But it's fun that they want to be there if they've got an interest in the gospel.
And we wouldn't do that with church, would we? Oh, numbers are dropping in church, let's get back to counseling. Actually, some churches do that. Anyway.
Anything else? Yeah.
Can you recommend any resources or training on helping children with special needs, additional needs in Sunday school or in community clubs? Or helping leaders to know how to help?
Yeah.
With additional needs.
That's a really good question. I can't, because it's such a broad term. So when you say additional needs, it could mean the child with dyslexia, or it could mean the child with serious cognitive difficulties. And therefore there's, in a sense, it's kind of, it's not how do I deal with children with additional needs, it's how do I deal with this child with additional needs. And that's where I kind of, I'll have a think, and I'll have a look. I mean, I'll give you my email, or give me yours, or whatever, and I'll have a look. But I always struggle with that because it's such a kind of breadth of things going on. I'll have a think. Anything else?
No question.
Yeah.
It seems quite common that families leave churches where there's no room to go to a bigger church for other bits.
Yeah.
Do you see that as a problem? How do you combat that? And also, how do you teach families in your church, Christian parents, to be the key
Brilliant, perfect question. Brilliant question, thank you. Again, how do we do it? Not perfectly, but this is what we try and do. Step number one, we try and teach the kids what the adults are learning on a Sunday. That's not always easy, but that's what we try and match it up. So on a Sunday morning, we say, the kids are going to be looking at the same thing as the grown-ups. And therefore, you can chat about it over your Sunday dinner table. And here's a question to help you to do that. And then here's a little fun sheet at the end, not fun sheet, a little kind of parents' notes at the end that give you a little Bible study on what we've all been looking at together. And some kind of little stories from the story Bible that also link in. So that they are constantly getting the message that we're in partnership here. We're helping you, you're helping us to do that. So we try and do it that way, but it's still an issue, and it's a constant battle. That was kind of part two of your question, I think, wasn't it? What was part one? Oh, if they leave to go to a bigger church.
It's a common occurrence.
Yeah. That is a good question. That's really hard, isn't it? I mean, again, ultimately, it's consumerism, isn't it, that often causes it. Based on good motives, I think I'd want to help our parents to understand the priority of the local church for their child. So there's some interesting research called Sticky Faith. It's come out of the States, and he in it, Chuck Clark recommends flipping our ratio rule. So instead of having five children to one adult, he says let's have five adults to one child. Then actually it takes five significant child to adult relationships for them to stick. So actually we want to be the kind of community family where the child goes, I don't want to leave because my adult friends are here. So there's no magic bullet, is there? No kind of quick solution, but it is trying to be a church where children have such deep relationships that they will stick. Do you know about the Amish? The Amish have a retention rate of their teenagers of 95%. Do you know that? The teenagers often have what's called a rumslinger, which is where they have like a year of just going wild and tasting the world, and 95% of them come back. and live in this weird community of horses and traps and strange clothes. Why? Because of the depths of relationships that are in that community. They want to come back. This is what they know. This is their family. Do you know they build their houses with intentionally small bedrooms so that the teenagers will spend time in the social areas of the house? Now, I'm not saying we become Amish, but I am saying it's relationships that mean that they will stick. And so I think, sorry, I'm on another of my hobby horses. This is under my PhD now. But I think conservative evangelicalism has bought into a modernist mindset. Forgive me if some of this doesn't make sense. A modernist mindset that basically says, well, our job is to take this truth and stick it in your heads. And the reaction to that has been, no, it's not about truth, it's all postmodernism, it's all about relationship, it's all about kind of, you know, letting the child express themselves. I think actually what we want to say is, no, there is truth that we embody as leaders, and it's about that relationship that we have that enables that truth to stick and make sense, because they see what it means in our lives. Does that make sense? So actually we want to be a church that is encouraging intergenerational relationships. And maybe that means some of our older folk taking the hit of having the children in the service more. So our philosophy is we take the children out when they have to, not have them in when we have to. Does that make sense? What can we keep them in for, rather than what can we take them out for? So they're used to being in for the adult songs, the creed, the prayers. They're used to being a genuine part, at least, you know, that's what we're trying to do. They're used to being a genuine part of the congregation. Is that? Yeah.
That's part of the answer, is kind of thing we're trying to do here, I guess, which is adding to, you've got your local youth working in the church, but also trying to, how can we partner together so that those teenagers are able to stay in my little church, but also to have relationships with children, with young people from other churches.
Mm.
So to the end of the start, so
yeah. I think that's part of it. So forgive me, Ruth. Ruth had three Christian female friends her age in our church, which I think really helped you. Your brother didn't, and I think he's found that really hard. Peer relationships are important. But so we do want to encourage them, and actually being into church, you know, that's a dangerous partnership, isn't it? That suddenly you find that they've made friends with a, you know, another child at the next door church, which is much bigger, and they end up going to their youth group. And yes, that can be the downside, the danger. But actually, I think if our intergenerational friendships are stronger, it will. They need both, I guess, is what I'm saying. But I think intergenerational is significant. Spencer.
Sorry, this is a little bit of an aside. I was at Mount Pleasant Church in Swansea over the summer, and happened to come at the end of a holiday Bible club, and walked into the most astonishing thing I think I've seen in a long time on these lines, and that they've run a holiday Bible club over the course of many weeks, but the children who are often from quite some poor background. Were coming midweek and to some things that were on, and also Sunday by Sunday. The kids were being encouraged to learn Proverbs. But then were, after the service on a Sunday, some of the older members of the church were holding up a sign that said, "Get Wisdom." And they, you had little old ladies and grandparents and various things sitting around the building with silly hats on and stuff. And the children were going up to them, reciting the Proverbs that they learned and getting rewards. And their strategy was deliberately to try to build a relationship between some of the adults and the children, but secondly, to teach the children that wisdom is found in the multitude of counselors, and thirdly, to teach the children that grey hair is a virtue and has wisdom.
Yeah,
it was. They have a huge retention rate in their church, and it's quite large. But I was just really impressed by the strategy as a concept. You know, how that looks in your own church. They had later calls or whatever. I mean, it was, you know, quite wild. But the fact remains, it was just very impressive to see.
Yeah. Any other questions, thoughts? Okay. Do grab me over lunch and be here for about another half hour, I think.
I suggest what we do now is actually just for 5 or 10 minutes, just to split into some smaller groups. And if you are a youth worker or a youth